I think if I were sitting in an audience and heard someone speak a sentence I am about to use, I might wince in sheer physical pain. It will sound like a line from a grade B movie, the only excuse for it being that it happens to be true. Our moment of destiny has come. After more than 2 years of hoping and many months of difficult negotiations, we have signed a contract for those 4 acres of land Bill Smith described for you, and we are now ready to launch the capital funds drive that will determine whether we can use it as the site of our permanent church home. I do not like using the pulpit on a Sunday to speak of our own internal affairs, but I have no choice this morning. It is necessary to say some things about what lies just ahead, including some comment about my own feelings, and it has seemed to me that I would be derelict in my duty if I failed to say them from this place. I hope our visitors will forgive me and come back next week for the start of a new series of sermons on that unique book called The Letter of James. One of the key words for members of this church early in 1986 will be the word priority. Each one of us will have to decide what things are important to us and the order of their importance. If you think I am about to tell you that building our own church should be the most important thing in your life in 1986, you are mistaken. I cannot tell you what your priorities for the new year should be. Oh, I could say easily enough that they ought to be those enduring things that go by names like love and mercy and justice, but I cannot tell you what your top priority should be when you make out your budget. You have to do that for yourself, and I refuse to capitalize on our friendship even so far as to ask you to do what you may or may not wish to do. I would enjoy the kind of church we have talked about, but I do not want it unless you do, which is perhaps a rather useless thing to say, because unless you want it more than you have wanted most things, even in your life, we are not going to have it. We have come now to that place where all the words we have spoken have to turn into deeds. The "wouldn't it be wonderful to have our own church" now has to become, "here's what I will do to make it happen." No effort in our brief history has been as unified or as sacrificial as this effort will have to be. We cannot count on a few people to make it successful. It will have to involve everybody. The fundraising experts tell us that something like 80% of the money in such campaigns comes from 10% of the givers. If that statistic holds with us, we don't have a chance. One thing I try to preserve in this pulpit, above all other things, is honesty. And I am determined this morning to be honest about what is to face us. We have been told that what we probably need to have hope of success are a few large gifts, $100,000, $75,000, $50,000, with the rest in figures most of us can comprehend. We shall, they say, have to have many, many pledges of $20,000 and $15,000 and $10,000, or it will not be possible to build a church. As a brochure will explain, this is not quite so formidable as it may sound. A person giving $20,000 can spread the payments over at least 3 years, but that will still represent a significant sacrifice for most of our people. I have no idea whether it is psychologically wise to say this next thing, but the truth is that I cannot make any kind of decent guess about the outcome of our fund drive. There are days when I think the whole church will unite in costly giving, and there are other days when I think, what if everybody wants it, but everybody thinks someone else will pay for it? That is not an unusual attitude in such a case, but this time it cannot work that way. I recall a minister from my childhood who used to say on these occasions, give till it hurts, and then give until it quits hurting. But I don't think cute little slogans like that have much power with people like you. I'd rather just say it plainly. We shall all have to give much more than it is convenient to give this once, or we shall have to make other arrangements about our future. We shall have to give up something we wanted, a particular vacation, a trip, a boat, a cruise. We simply cannot hope to do this thing unless a huge proportion of our people are willing to sacrifice. It may turn out that we are not willing to do that. If so, if our will to sacrifice does not correspond with our wish to have a building, it does not mean that we are unworthy people, or even that our happy relationship with one another has to come to an end. We can go on worshiping together, either here or in some other rented building, and wait for what a more distant tomorrow may have in store. That would be a great disappointment to some. What we cannot be sure of until after the next few weeks is how many. I think I can separate my love of ministry from this particular issue. I confess that it would be a glorious feeling if our desires were so strong that we could support the building now. I'm not sure I could stand the happiness of singing "Morning Has Broken" on the first Sunday in a brand new church, but I would love to find out. That, however, is not adequate cause for even one person in this church to make a sacrificial promise. I doubt that I need to tell you how much I care about this family and the friendships and the life we share together. That's bound to show, I think, in my face from week to week. But you must not make your sacrifices and build a new church home because of our history together and our friendship. There is no sufficient reason to do anything this difficult unless you want this church for yourselves and for generations yet to come. It must not be a reaction to anything that happened to us. It must not be because we simply wish to prove something. It must not be because you think a friend of yours in the pulpit wants it or needs it so much that he couldn't be happy without it. That is not true, and those are not good reasons. The right reason is that you cherish the open and intelligent faith which this kind of church represents, and that you want a place where that faith can be preserved and nourished in a world that is not very congenial to it. It means that some of you, who may give the most, will be giving for a longer future than you have. It takes an extraordinary amount of faith in the value of a church to make someone do that. If so much faith is not yet in our disposition, it means only that and nothing more. It does not mean that we don't care. It only means that we don't care quite that much, and that we have some other things we'd rather do. No matter how this thing turns out, we must have no bad feelings about it among ourselves. We must respect anyone who says to us, "I wish I could help, but I can't," even if that seems to us to translate clearly, "I'm sorry, but there are other things I wish to do with my money." People have that choice. And no matter how much we may want a building, we must acknowledge that choice, not grudgingly, but graciously. We must also foresee and be prepared for another prospect. There are people who will join us later who might have come sooner, except that they did not wish to help us pay for a building. That may tax our goodwill, but our goodwill has been ordered from a higher source than our personal feelings. A very pleasant lady who has never been with us in a worship service told me one day not long ago, "When you get your building out this way, I want to join your church. But," and she smiled, "I don't want to pay for building it." I like her honesty. She would make a good member, and she would help to maintain a building, but she has no emotional attachment to our history that makes her wish to sacrifice, as we shall have to do. We have even had, as we knew we would, an occasional member drift away from active involvement because he or she wished to avoid a similar sacrifice. If we raise the necessary money to build and they return on our dedication Sunday, we shall welcome them too. I care enough about the possibility of our own place to have gone out already to talk with friends who are not members of this church, but who are friendly to it and who may wish to help. Whether those efforts will bear any fruit, I cannot say. But some of you may need to do what I have done. Visit with someone friendly to our religious views and invite them to help. If you think what we offer has value, you can do that without embarrassment. If Uncle Ned or Aunt Sue has wondered where to make a useful contribution, please share your knowledge. If we do manage a building, will we grow? I would think so. If the people are honest, who have told me that they would like to be here, but can't get the family moving in time to reach us by 9:30, then perhaps a 10 or 10:30 worship time would make an initial helpful difference. We will also pick up a few who, as I said, are waiting in the wings to be sure we make it, to be sure we are really serious, and that we plan to be permanent. If we present graciously what our faith has to offer, I think we will attract members from a new neighborhood. I have told our Board of Deacons that we have reached a point where it is increasingly difficult to do that here. People have to feel very secure before they join a group that rents and that is limited in programs by the terms of that rental. In a new building, we would have weekday meetings and events that would acquaint people with our church and our people. I should hope that we would offer space for discussion groups. I wish myself to offer the classes in biblical studies that I have missed keenly over the last 2.5 years. That kind of exposure can help to attract new members, but it is prohibited here because of weekday parking problems and the difficulties of scheduling. We have volunteers who care so much about this church that they have swallowed their reluctance to ask anybody else for money and agreed to talk with others. Please treat them graciously. They are driven by love against their inclinations. Make their job as easy as you can, no matter what your response may be. I thought of trying to compliment people this morning who have given so many, many hours to looking at churches and trying to buy land, but I am too fearful of leaving someone out. Suffice it to say that we have those, you know most of them, who have given literally hundreds of valuable hours to uncompensated work in behalf of all the rest of us. Doctors, lawyers, merchants, chiefs, especially chiefs. Whatever happens, these people should have earned the lasting gratitude of every one of us. We know the things we have done already. They are extraordinary when we count them. What we don't know for sure at the end of this year is what we will do next. Which isn't strange at all, since, as somebody said once, any fool can count the seeds in an apple, but only God can count the apples in a seed. What may come someday of what we do in the next few weeks, only He knows. Thank you, dear friends, for a warm and happy 1985. And may 1986 be for us what God wishes it to be. Amen.